to our special segment, Pioneer Pulse, with Jacqueline
and Chaya, where we check the vitals of life and birth in rural America.
I feel like self-responsibility in birth work is a big, big, important topic.
Mm-hmm.
That is not... And there's like so many avenues to chat about.
Yes.
With that.
Yeah, I'm almost not... person, it's like, you know, we as birth workers have self-responsibility, our clients have self-responsibility. I think that's kind of a hard one to navigate, especially in the event that there's like a bad outcome.
Yeah,
you know, so
right,
there are a lot of things to talk about with self-responsibility, especially in the society that we live in, where it is very litigious and
mm-hmm.
people are afraid, like what we were talking about last time, people are afraid of reprisal, they're afraid of losing their licenses, they're afraid of, you know, going to court, being sued, going to jail. So
right.
Again, there's that element of self-responsibility and kind of understanding what everybody's roles are depending on what they've chosen for themselves, you know?
Right. Yeah. So... I'm having trouble like figuring out where I want to even begin for mm-hmm. myself. So do you have thoughts other like to, you know, continue what you were just saying? Do you have a stream of thought that you want to row down the stream?
As far as the self-responsibility stuff?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say the thing that's popping into my head right now is like our self-care almost.
Absolutely. And boundaries. You know, we talked about that
yeah.
a little bit in our last chat, but boundaries are kind of our way of being responsible to ourselves by saying like, these are the things that I can do. These are the times that I can do them. And these are the times that I can't, you know, it's like, when I take off October and I don't do a lot of births or any births this year, I didn't do any births in October, is because that's our family time. You know, we go hunt, we go camp, try to get, you know, our food for the winter and the rest of the year. And so it is hard for me to tell people no, or it was, but I realized when I started telling people no, that it was because I really needed that time to be away from birth work, because it is, you know, it's so hard. It's so grueling. It can be really exhausting. You know, you're up all hours of the night, you're on call, you know, for weeks or months, depending on how many clients you have. And so when I finally started doing that and setting boundaries as far as like when I'm available and how many clients I'll take, it made it a lot easier. You know, like,
yeah,
I had months when I first started doing this where I had like 3 clients that overlapped their windows by like at least a few days. And just looking at that calendar stressed me out. And I was like, why? Why did I do that? But it's because I didn't want to say no to anybody.
Yeah.
And I felt guilty. But at the same time, it's like, it doesn't help anybody if, you know, I'm burnt out, or if I take clients and then they end up, you know, going into labor at the same time, which of course statistically doesn't happen very often. It has never happened to me. But that fear in my head, as it gets closer to those due windows, I'm like, oh my gosh, why did I do this to myself? Because now I'm just really stressed out.
Yeah.
So I think self-care is a big thing, you know, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, being able to make those boundaries. Like, I didn't take any clients in November either, because my family came to visit from out of state for Thanksgiving. And I only have 1 client in December because she lives here in town. So it's been an interesting change in my practice to start telling people no, but it actually has gotten a lot easier because I realized how good it felt to be able to say, this is my time for me and my family. And
yeah.
It's been,
yeah.
And I think we as birth workers don't do that enough. And that,
right.
And that makes it harder for us to be at our best for our clients if we're not mm-hmm. taking responsibility for our downtime and for our health, our physical health, our emotional health, our spiritual health. You know, it doesn't really set us up to be there and be present in the way that we can if we're rested and we're happy and we're enjoying this work and we're not feeling like completely overwhelmed.
Right. Yeah. I was just thinking about this dear midwife in my area that she's an elderly woman and she's got like a bazillion clients at all times. And she has like a 5-hour radius that she covers. I'm like, geez, Louise, I don't even know how she does it. But I was realizing, I mean, first of all, I was thinking, you know, she would talk a lot about how she takes naps on the side of the road and, you know, if she's feeling very tired and she's able to, she takes her husband along with her and things like that. But I'm just thinking like, gosh, on an elderly body, especially like that cannot be
sustainable, good,
you know? Yeah. Sustainable. And then I was also realizing, and this isn't to criticize hers, this is really just a pattern that I see that I hear from lots of midwives that are taking on, you know, my judgment, too many clients, is that they have no time. I mean, this is kind of our complaint with like OBs and the modern medical system, where you don't have any time to like dive into the deep things. You don't have any time to,
the relationship suffers. Yeah.
Right. And I've witnessed that from people that like, well, they were spread too thin and they were so worn down that they can't, you know, really rely on their instinct or their relationship or the connection with that client or that mom, that family, because they didn't have time or they don't have the capacity, like emotionally or mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And then they end up relying heavily on the tools and the checklists and the boxes and the, you know, those more systematic.
The more clinical.
Yeah, like they end up just sort of falling on that, and I feel like that's definitely a piece of the self-responsibility thing, a big part of the self-responsibility piece is that we sort of this is the same in motherhood, when we're feeling really like frayed and spread thin or whatever, we're much more likely, you know, to use these handy tools more often than maybe we would. So like when I am just like not feeling rested and stuff, my kids will be probably watching TV the majority of the week or something like that, you know, because I'm, and it's a great, the TV, you know, it's a great tool, to use, but I don't really want my kids watching TV all the time. But if I'm just like at my wit's end the whole week, you know what, just go watch TV because I can't deal with this. And I feel like that's what we can easily fall into when we're not taking on that responsibility to take care of ourselves and boundaries. Like when we are letting ourselves get spread thin, we're letting ourselves get run ragged, we're letting ourselves not do the relationships and connections, and you know, we're not diving into those because I just don't have the mental space for this, then we're more likely to use those tools that are easy and socially acceptable to just like fall back on at any given moment. And it really is intertwined. Like I'm trying to kind of like almost section these off so we can talk about them in like categories, but it's so interwoven. Boundaries and self taking care of ourselves.
It's true, and I think that, you know, it is very much like what we see in the medical system, where you are spread so thin that there is a heavy reliance on technology. I mean, that's the continuous monitoring, that's like a perfect example of that. This will tell me if anything major changes or anything happens. And it frees me up to take care of all of these people at this kind of same median level, you know? of interaction. And I think also, you know, when we're not doing our self-care and we're not taking responsibility for our own health and our own mental space, you know, it really sets us up to make mistakes because, you know, you're not really able to tune into your intuition. You're not really able to necessarily think clearly. At least I'm not when I'm in that space. And it really does set us up to maybe not practice this safely because we're not giving ourselves the time that we need to rest and recover and recharge. And I think that's something that we owe any client that we take, is that they have us at our, you know, very best for so that they can have a birth that they feel like is positive and that is, you know, safe, you know?
Right. Yeah. And it's hard work. Like, it's hard to, well, like you kind of alluded to it already. Like, you took on too many clients at that certain point and you were like, you know, feeling it. And because it's not easy to tell people no. It's not easy when people are coming to you like, hey, can you help me out with this? And like, you really can't. Like, you really can't.
Especially rurally, when there's nobody else, you really do feel like, you know, but it's hard to, we have to recognize that, you know, it's not our job to save everybody. And we can't be responsible for every single person that comes and wants care. It's just, it's not realistic. But that's, I think, where we are, you know, you and I are both in these rural areas. You know, you feel for these people because you know the very scarce resources that they have. And so to then tell someone, well, no, I can't, to be yet another person that has to tell them no, because the only midwife around is already booked, or because no other doula will come to where they are. Or it's just, it sucks to have to do that. But you know, exercising boundaries usually results in disappointing other people, unfortunately. And that's the reality of having boundaries.
It's, I totally hear that and feel that. I've pretty much made the decision to not take births in the winter season
too.
Because I mean, where we're at, like, it's pretty treacherous to be traveling,
very unpredictable
at night, and like, all of that kind of stuff. So there's that aspect of it. Yeah. And there's that aspect of it. But the other part is that I think, at least for me, I feel the winter hibernation, the winter, like, crawling into my cave.
Yeah.
I feel that so heavily that, like, I almost, like, I love chatting with people in my community and stuff like that, but I almost just, like, don't want to hang out with it. Like, if you can come hang out with me at my house and it's real chill, like, if you're the kind of person where,
and you're only gonna,
like,
stay for a set amount of time
and you're not expecting too much out of me, you know, you're just that type of person that can just kind of hang. We can just do a kickback, I'm good. If you're the kind of person that needs lots of entertaining, you know, entertainment, and, you know,
this,
I need
may
to
not be for you.
like, I can't, I just don't have, like, we're doing our Hanukkah. Well, by the time this comes out, it probably will be after, but we're doing our Hanukkah, like, stuff. And I'm like, okay, this is the last, this is the end of the partying and doing all the, you know, big event type stuff, because I'm like, I'm already like, ready to just be in my jammies the whole season. And
till what, May, when it's finally not snowing anymore.
But
I agree.
But truly, like, I just, and I'm imagining, like, having a client with me, you know, kind of naturally moving into this, like, this energy state, and then picturing having a client, I just don't know that I would be the best I could be. Like, it just, and I also hear from so many seasoned midwives that, like, oh man, if I had established from the very beginning this, you know, certain time frame, this big chunk of time where I'm taking a break from being on call, oh, it would feel so much, I think that would be so much better. I just hear over and over again that that's an important move to make, that take a month But not just a month, because I've heard too that a month isn't even long enough. That to really kind of regroup. I've heard like minimum like 2 months. You know, about. And so, you know, I'm trying to gather up all this wisdom and start out with these good habits, because they'll become habits, like, and that's the thing that I've definitely learned the hard way enough times to finally like, oh, I need to really actually like create these good habits, prepare for them,
stick to them, and establish this so that other people, it's come to expect it, and it's not like a question.
Right. And there will always be people that ask anyway, I think, but but it'll at least be more established. Like for us and our family, we do, you know, we keep Shabbat on Saturdays. So, and we've been doing this for years. And, you know, those who are close to us know that. So they don't ask us to go and do things, but new people don't know as well. You know, new people we're meeting and stuff like that, they don't know as well. But when they ask us, hey, like, let's, you know, or would you like to, you know, do this party with, like, come to our party on Saturday or whatever. Like, it's the easiest thing in the world now, because we've been doing this for so long, to be like, thank you so much for the invitation, but we, like, Saturdays are our family rest days. Like, we intentionally do nothing. And it's no skin off my back. And then the other person is like, oh, okay, that, I get it, you know, blah, blah, blah.
And then they recognize that moving forward. And it's not like something that they, you know, that's weird to them at all.
Right.
Something that they expect. And
yeah. And the consistency, I think, is important too. Like, not just for us and like our purposes, but I, in the past, we were not so strict, like years ago at this point, but we were not so strict with what we would and would not do on a Saturday. And some of our family members are the kind of people that really like to, like, they really, 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 really want everything to go their way. And if you tell them no, well, they're going to find every possible way to get you to do what they want anyway. And so there would be times where they'd be like, hey, let's go do this on Saturday. And we'd be like, no, you know, we don't do that kind of stuff on Saturday. And so the next opportunity, well, you know, you should definitely come to our birthday party, this family member's birthday party, because it's their birthday. And, you know, it's on this day because that's when the most people can have their, you know, can show up. And so, but it's this person, like, it's this family member, so you need to be there. And we'd be like, okay, you know,
yeah.
And we'd kind of go, and then we would regret it every time, because then we'd go into the week exhausted and cranky and, you know, all this stuff.
And now you're like, we do nothing. Yeah.
So then the next time there's a family, because other people are there, you know, the next time,
well, you came to so-and-so's birthday.
Exactly. You came to that. Why aren't you coming to my thing? And so, you know, and so then it's like, oh, well, crap, this actually is not, it's not fair to us, and it's not fair to everybody else, because we are kind of being wishy-washy. So all of that to say, the consistency is really important for both parties. And I feel like that's a big, that was somebody, I saw a new doula on some group somewhere that was saying, that some red flags were coming up with this potential client or with this new client or something. And she was starting to feel like very seriously, like this was not a good fit. And there was plenty of time, you know, for this person before her birth, this person's birth,
to find somebody else maybe that would be a better fit.
Yeah. And so she was like, but I feel so bad, you know, I shouldn't, I said yes already, and, you know, this and this, and I could change that, and that wouldn't be such a big deal, but I just feel so bad, da, 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 da. And I just immediately was like, you're not, because, you know, because I think we care about people, so we want to, we're thinking more so about the other person, I think, more often than we are thinking about ourselves. And so she's, you know, I don't want to put this person out or whatever. And I was like, look, you're not doing her a favor either. You're not doing anybody a favor, because she might find somebody, there might be a better fit for her out there
that she's not finding right now.
yeah, that she's not finding because you're in the way. And she was like, oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way. But it's so true, you know? When
you're ignoring that stuff and you're ignoring your gut instinct that something is not right, then you're betraying yourself, and you're not taking that wisdom that you have inside of you that's like, you know what, I don't have a good feeling about that. And if you continue to shut that down and shut that down, I always regret it. I'm always like, man, I should have done that. I knew this was a bad idea. And then you really do feel like you just kind of betrayed yourself, you know, like I didn't trust myself enough to believe that feeling. And I feel like every time I ignore it and every time I don't trust that feeling, I wish I had. I've never been like, I ignored it and it worked out. I feel like every time that happens, you're like, oh, I should have done that. But that's the thing too about self-responsibility is you have to be able to listen to those red flags. And if something is coming up where you're like, this is not going to be a good fit for me, you're going to carry that with you. That person's birth is going to be in the back of your head the whole time. And it's not helpful for them either, because you're not fully available to somebody when you have that feeling or that blockage about that relationship. You can't be fully available to them. Right. And I don't think that's fair to you or to the person that you're trying to work with. So
I'm thinking to pivot just slightly, I was thinking about like these relationships that we have that we have with the government also like the whole, you know, another aspect of the self-responsibility topic. I know my own family, when I tell them, or when I originally told them, like, I was not interested in ever getting a license, and stuff like that, you know, they think I'm like the craziest person on the planet. But with, you know, some of them, they lovingly think I'm the craziest person on the planet. Others, I think, really are like, okay, you're just crazy.
it's endearing to some people, but not everyone.
Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting because it's like, you know, that line of thinking is like, oh, it's foolish, you know, it's irresponsible and stuff like that. But my thinking, so I'm the kind of person that like, I've never been very good what's that called when you're like, you've got a celebrity and you kind of fawning all over yourself?
Infatuation, or?
You know, you're starstruck. I've never been starstruck by authoritative figures necessarily. Like growing up in the church, I didn't really, like, it's not that I didn't care about the pastor or like, you know, this, whoever it is coming in, you know, the singer or somebody like that. It's not that I didn't care and didn't think that they were very valuable and very neat people. It's just like your fanciness doesn't impress me. Like it was never, you know, like that's never been a thing, and it's gotten me trouble sometimes. But that's kind of how I feel about the government. Oh my gosh, where I totally lost my train. I threw myself off with the starstruck thing. Oh, irresponsibility. So for me, it's been easy to like, okay, I'm going to be independent, you know, with this stuff. Oh, no. Sorry. Backtrack a little bit. My thinking, like if I did become licensed, so they think I'm irresponsible for not wanting to be licensed. But my thought is that because I know that that's in me, that non-starstruck, you know, like not very impressed by man-made authority kind of thing, I know that if I was licensed and I took on a client who wanted me to forego something that was required by my license, I would be more inclined to answer, you know, what my client is asking for. And be like, screw the license, you know, screw the government.
A fundamental thing, it's like with midwifery licensure. And I think it's like, there's these two types of self-responsibility. One is the midwives that have licenses are doing it because they're trying to be responsible and they're trying to do things the way that they're supposed to do them.
Right.
But
right.
The way they're told they're supposed to do it. But there are so many midwives that I have talked to who are licensed who do exactly that. They have a license, but they still bend the rules or completely break them entirely, which I have no problem with. And that's not a judgment, but it is like they're being more, that's a different type of self-responsibility because you're recognizing like, this is something I personally feel comfortable with. I feel skilled with, I'm willing to do this. I'm being self-responsible because I recognize what my abilities are and what my comfort level is, but it's not the same self-responsibility that made you decide to go out and get a license and comply with what is expected. And right. I think that's a fundamental problem with licensing is that midwives who are going to do those things that are not in their scope are going to do them whether they have a license or not.
Right.
And so it's just the crazy restrictions that they put in place. I think you're either going to do them or you're not, and you're going to either get in trouble for it or you're not. And that's what I've heard from so many people is that are midwives is that they are licensed, but you know, they've delivered breech babies when they're not, you know, in a state where they can, or they've done multiples when they're not in a state they can, or they've done this or done that because that their clients wanted that option.
Right.
And so, yeah, I agree with you. It's like, you know, the license is there and people are being responsible by getting them, but then a lot of people who have them start doing things outside of that scope anyways. So it's like, what is the purpose like of the license? And so many midwives complain about the licensure problem and complain about, you know, that it's a flawed system, and it is, but the solution seems to continue to be, let's try to fix the license, so the process of licensure, or it's never been, let's just get rid of this entirely.
Right.
You know, somebody posted something about Gail Hart was the one that said it, I think, something about how independent, legal, independent midwifery, like without licensure. I can't remember the quote. I'm gonna have to look it up because I don't want to misquote her, but it was something that Gail Hart said about how, about licensed midwifery, unlicensed midwifery. So I'll look that up really quick while we're talking.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to put quotes around you know, that you said, you know, people are being responsible by getting their license. To me, I'm visualizing that as like, quote, unquote, responsible.
I'm doing what I'm supposed to
do. Yeah. And because ironically, in my opinion, you're actually, some of the responsibility is being shouldered by the government. You're giving some of the responsibility to the government.
I can't help giving it a good number. I'm not allowed to do this. Yeah.
Right. Right. And it's, like, I think everybody needs to choose what's going to be worth it and what their community needs from them and stuff like that. Like I really, there are too many nuances, in each community and all of that to just like, I don't want to judge all the licensed midwives or anything. Because not only are there lots of really wonderful licensed midwives, but you know, I'm all for making a choice just with eyes wide open. Like I want everybody to be considering all of the things. And I think, and you kind of said it too, that there is a self-responsibility in choosing licensure too. Did you find the quote?
You think you're doing the right thing, whether you necessarily want to do it or not. You're like, well, this is the right thing to do. Maybe I don't agree with it, but it is the right thing to do is I think what a lot of people think, or a lot of people are thinking that it's going to offer them some kind of protection, but I don't necessarily think that it keeps you from getting, you know, reported and sued and investigated. I don't think it necessarily protects you from any of those things. So
right. Oh yeah, it does not. It doesn't. That's something that I think so many people don't even like, they're not even aware of it. That even like, you know, consumers, like the average Joe that is even aware of licensure with midwives, like they think, oh, okay, so then that person is legally allowed to do the things. And it's like, well, barely. Depending,
maybe not. Depends on where I am and what you want. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely an air quotes thing. Like, you know, they're being responsible because it's like, well, it's like when your kid's like, I don't want to brush my teeth, but I have to. Although that's, you know, there's more argument for that. But still, it's the same thing. Like, I'm doing it because I have to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like when you are somebody who you're aware of the limitations, you're aware of, you know, the riskiness of licensure and stuff like that, taking on the self-responsibility to actually uphold your license like that. Like I don't want people to choose some authoritative entity over the person there in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I would really rather people commit to what they're choosing.
Yeah.
Like, so, and have that self-responsibility of committing to what they're choosing. So mm-hmm. I'm taking, you know, like if I chose licensure, you know, I understand the limitations and I'm taking, and so now I am self-responsible. I'm responsible to myself to make sure that I am crossing the T's and dotting the I's mm-hmm. and doing what I said I would do
mm-hmm.
under my licensure. And I feel like that's not necessarily what's being done across the board. You know, right. I mean, really, really, in the medical system is such a beast and the government is such a beast and stuff. And it's so big that it's not even, I'm like even hesitant to just make a blanket statement like that. But definitely there's lots of room for nuance, but the biggest part of it is that self-responsibility. And then did you find the quote, by the way? I'm still looking for it.
I'm really bummed. Okay. It's a really good quote, but I didn't want to like misquote her. Somebody had it as their profile picture on Facebook. And of course, the day I look for it is the day that they are no longer being recommended to me as a potential friend on Facebook.
Of course. I'm
like, so I'll see if I can find it, but,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so those who are not choosing licensure, there's so much. So this is definitely something that I've wanted to like kind of speak to. There's so much like fear. There's so much fear. We kind of talked about it when we were going over the conference in Denver.
Oh yeah.
But the fear of going to jail or persecution or whatever, drives people to then do more things out of fear. They're like fearfully, you know, I think we used the zombie apocalypse last time. So
yes, it was
like people. Action. Yeah. So like people they're sort of frantically trying to put boards up, you know, to put a barrier around them from the zombies, but they're doing a really shit job because they're like frantically doing the things. And not only are they doing a terrible job with their own you know, fence or whatever, but they're causing a lot of commotion because they're so scared in the way that they, you know, they're like dropping boards because they're freaking out and they're just mm-hmm. they're you know, so they're actually drawing more attention to themselves because they're doing all of this stuff fearfully. And I was just speaking with another birth worker who she did WAPIO's program.
Yeah, she's amazing. WAPIO is amazing.
Yes, WAPIO is amazing. a true wise woman. I love her.
I do too. She's awesome.
So she did hers. And so she's not quite sure, you know, this birth worker that I was talking to, she's not quite sure like how she's going to name herself. She just knows what she's wanting to offer people, right? And mm-hmm. she's creating her website, and I guess she kind of just like filled out the things, you know, created the basic website and showed it to someone who knows her really well. And this person was like, why are you being so like elusive in everything that you say? It's making me feel like this is really shady and weird.
Oh no, yeah.
You know? And so she's like, oh, I didn't, you know, I'm just trying to like be careful about what I say, and but I'm trying to, you know, do this, and I didn't, you know, that wasn't her intention, but like, because she's kind of, you know, doing this out of like a, I'm not sure, and I don't know what's gonna, you know, bring down the hammer or not. Mm-hmm. You know, she's doing not, I don't want to say she's like totally fearful or whatever, but like, you know, she's hesitant for these valid reasons.
Absolutely. But
it's showing in her work,
like in the way that she's trying to figure out how to describe herself.
Yeah. You know. So then people are going to be like, why are you scared? Now I'm scared. I'm scared, right? If you're scared, you know, and that's kind
if
of the
you
funny
don't even
thing.
Know what you are, then what am I supposed to? Yeah. And I understand that completely, because, you know, you're legally, you're not allowed to call yourself a midwife anymore unless mm-hmm. you do certain things, which is bonkers. But, mm-hmm. you know, we talked about this with doula certification, like they're trying to make it so that you can't have non-certified doulas in some of the hospitals around here. And I think they're trying to do that same thing of like, we can't have anybody doing things that we don't know what they're doing. We can't have anyone yeah. not. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, and even with Wapio and like Margot and Indie Birth and all that, like they're not telling people, you know, who aren't licensed, like just call yourself a midwife. Everyone who runs one of these programs that is not MEEK accredited and is not associated with licensure is saying like, don't call yourself a midwife unless you really feel like that's what you are. Unless you feel like you have the experience and the knowledge to do that. Like, don't represent yourself as something that you're maybe not. So it's not like they're telling people to go out there and be irresponsible and say, I'm a midwife, when they haven't had any kind of training. No one's saying that at all. But it is hard, because you're like, what am I supposed to say without getting myself in trouble?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, the language has been, it's like it's locked up. So we're trying to, it's like one of those stupid games where they're like, here's the, you know, you got to try to.
I can tell you what I'm not.
Yeah.
I can tell you what I'm not, but I can't tell you what I am.
Yeah. And so it's annoying in that way. But the funny thing is that I think you know, almost as an aside, is kind of creating this interesting rediscovery of midwifery. Because I think a lot of people are like, what even am I? Well, you know, yeah, and they're diving into, they're diving into their ancestry. What did their ancestors call this kind of role? Okay. They're diving mm-hmm. into like history. They're diving into their faith, you know, journeys, and like trying to, you know, so it's actually kind of interestingly.
Or like what other cultures maybe, you know, how other cultures identify those types of things and what words they use. So like, it really kind of opens your mind to, if I can't be that, I could be something else. What would that be? If I could define myself as something and I can't use this term, what would I call myself? You know, it's kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I came up with
creative.
Yeah, that's where I came up with Birth Shomrit, because there's a role in Judaism. Well, it can be an official role, but it also can be just kind of like I don't know what to call it. Kind of, you can kind of categorize yourself a little bit. So like, it's Shomer, you know, Shomer Mitzvot. I'm kind of butchering the accent right now, but. So Shomer Mitzvot is somebody who is a keeper of the mitzvot, so like mm-hmm. the commandments and mm-hmm. good deeds and things like that. So, but there's a Shomer Negia, Shomer, you know, there's like Shomer this, Shomer that, and it's like, I'm the keeper or the guardian or the I'm being watchful of, you mm-hmm. know, this other thing. So that's where I came up with Birth Shomrit. Shomrit is the feminine version of Shomer. And, you know, and I'm like the, you know, the keeper and the watcher, the guardian, you know, like I'm standing there, you know, intentionally with, you know, birth,
right,
with, you know, this stuff. And, but it was very interesting for me to get there, because I was like, what is this concept? And I'm actually still sort of adapting, my practice now, because I'm realizing the funny thing is that when I was intent on calling myself a midwife, it kind of put me in a box in my own head. And I think other people, you know, sort of expect somewhere within this box the same sort of thing. And now that I have, and it's been a long, you know, several months of me using Shomrit and kind of diving into what that is for me, it's like opened up all these like, oh, well, I don't have to be my own version of a cookie cutter, you know, midwife. Mm-hmm. I can be whatever I want. And as long as I'm conveying that to people, like specific, like this is what you will get with me. Mm-hmm. As long as I'm conveying that clearly to people, which I'm still working on, by the way, because it's not easy. Then someone else can look and be like, ooh, yes, I do want that. I don't want the cookie cutter midwife over here, or I don't want, you know, this kind of stuff. Really, I want that. I like that. Mm-hmm. And it's this weird thing, and you know, maybe they'll just call me a midwife, you know, because it's kind of concise and like, it's, you know,
recognizable.
This is my midwife. Okay. Yeah. And people will be like, oh, okay. And they'll move on with their life. Or a doula or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it's, you know, cause I have different offerings that I offer people, but this all I think is in the self-responsibility piece, because then I can't rely. I don't even get to rely on the cookie cutter. I don't get to rely on the box of midwife. I don't get to rely on people's expectations. And
no, you have to set those and you have to be clear about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And
you have to be able to define it so that people understand it clearly. Yeah. And that's right. All on you.
Yeah. And again, it's the harder route. It's the harder mm-hmm. road. It's, yeah. It's more, it, again, even on the licensing side, like I would think for someone like me, it would be harder to commit to a license than it is for me to just kind of like be over here defining things for myself, you know, in defining my offerings for myself.
And there may be some things that like you would, that would be the same as if you had a license. You might be like, well, that's something that I personally am just not comfortable doing, but it's because you're not comfortable, not because you were told you couldn't. You were saying like, me as a person, I don't do that because I'm not comfortable with it, or whatever reason, you know, you're defining that for yourself. You're not saying like, I would totally do that, but I'm not allowed to do it. You know, it kind of,
right.
It hits differently when you're like, no, I don't do that because of, or I do that because I believe in it, or because I'm comfortable with it, or I'm not comfortable with it. You're saying it's like, you're defining that for yourself, not saying, well, I'm not allowed to do that because of this, or I totally would do that because, but I'm not allowed to, or, you know, these are the things I'm allowed to do. Then it just sounds like, it's like, how committed are you to those things? If you're like, well, I do it because I'm allowed to do it, or I don't do it because,
you know. Yeah, we have to, in a more common modern slang, we have to own it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's,
as the
it's,
kids are saying.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's so true. And that's actually bringing me to thinking about like our mistakes too. And when we're not very clear. Mm-hmm. And
being able to say that was on me, I should have explained that better, or.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I didn't realize that didn't come across correctly. And then how am I going to remedy that?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that, I feel like that's missing across the board. That's missing in the birth field, period, is this being willing to be wrong, being willing to make mistakes, mm-hmm. and be open about that willing, like they're not open about the willingness necessarily, but open to the fact like, oh yeah, I did, that was on me, like you just said, like mm-hmm. there's too much. Well, you said it better than what I'm going to come up with probably, but yeah, there's too much of the cop out, you know, blaming somebody else, or using something else as an excuse. There's just too much of that.
People don't want to shoulder that responsibility because there's so much potential for reprisal, and there's so many different consequences. Like, obviously there's always consequences of every decision, and there's consequences when we make the wrong decision, but the consequences that are imposed from outside when it comes to birth work, if you do make a mistake, are huge. So a lot of people don't want to take that responsibility. A lot of people are really afraid to talk about when they make mistakes. You know, I think a lot of times peer review is, when you're licensed, can be really, really stressful for people when they have a case that they have to talk about, because there is that potential of like, I made this mistake and now everyone is judging me. Am I going to get ostracized by the midwifery community? Are they going to report me? Are they, you know, even though peer review is supposed to be confidential, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's, you know, that it stays that way. So I think that that's where you see a lot of people not wanting to take responsibility or ownership of mistakes, because the stakes are so high and it's so scary. And we're not fostering a community where it's like, okay, what kind of a mistake was it? What was the result? Like, let's all just take a breath and let's look at this individually before we start making these insane, like, accusations and decisions. But yeah, I feel like it's just, there's so much hysteria and so much fear that it makes it hard for people to be willing to come forward and be like, yep, that was on me and I was totally wrong. And these are the changes that I've made, or these are the things I'm going to do moving forward so that that doesn't happen again. You know, we can't even give people the opportunity to learn. I mean, that's, you, as long as you're learning from your mistakes, that's the only time that a mistake is valuable, is when you're learning from it. And if you don't have the opportunity to do that because you can't talk about it with anyone, then are we just setting people up to make more of the same mistakes, or just make it so that they're so afraid to even practice that they just don't anymore, you know?
Right. Yeah. So,
but I'll have to find that Gail Hart quote, and then I guess we can put it in the show notes, because I've literally looked at it like 100 times every time I go on Facebook. That person's, I can't remember who it is, but I would look them up. That person's account keeps showing up as like a suggested friend. And then today I go to look for it and I'm like, what? Of course it's gone. So I'll have to find it. I'm going to look for it until I find it, because it's driving me nuts.
Yeah, no, I can relate to that for sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. And yeah, it's funny. In the beginning of this conversation, I was thinking like, there's, you know, bullet point things that we could talk about with self-responsibility and it'll be neat and tidy and we'll just tie it up in the end and it'll be wonderful. And now we've solved the world's problems with self-responsibility. And just as we talk about it, it's like, gosh, there really is just like, I think we just could talk about it forever because there's so many, it's so nuanced and everything that has to do with birth work is so messy.
Yeah,
because we're dealing with systems, like established, like bigger systems, and then we're dealing with historical wounds, and then we're dealing with society norms, and
it's just, there's so many layers. It's like
like it's nuts, and like I hope that it didn't come across like I'm judging the hell out of licensed midwives or whatever, but because I'm
I don't think it does. I think it goes back to what we were talking about before last time we did this, which is like, we're all kind of in the same boat. And I think midwives are trying to figure out like how the hell to keep this profession alive. I think.
Yeah. And maybe the reinventing, you know, thing that I think a lot of people are doing, you know, maybe that's going to be, we're going to usher in, you know, the new era.
Mm-hmm.
The inevitable new era that we're all headed towards, like, what the heck? We're walking forward with our hands out in the fog, like, okay, pretty sure this is leading somewhere new, but holy crap.
Hopefully it's not over the edge of a cliff. I can't see it very far in front of me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I have a good feeling it's just like normal, like always historically, it's going to be really messy.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be messy for a while longer, I think. One thing I think is for sure, and we kind of touched on it before, I think in that Denver episode, that we've got to collectively be courageous and be willing to take on our own, you know, our stuff. Like my, like I need to be able to look at my stuff and deal with it. Like the things that are nagging me that I know I need to do, but I'm afraid to do them. I need to do them. I need mm-hmm. to get, I need to gather myself up and actually do them. And we look around in our communities and we see this need, and it's going to be scary and lonely for a while, but we need people to start stepping up in their little worlds, because as soon as healthy communities start touching each other, then we've got healthy like regions and healthy mm-hmm. societies and stuff like that. But we have to, it's got to start with us, and we just have to be brave, because it's not going to be easy and it's going to be messy.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it is definitely all part of that self-responsibility piece.
Thanks for joining me here. Remember to subscribe, write a review, and check out the show notes for other ways to connect. Nothing on this podcast is medical or legal advice. By engaging with this content, you agree to take full responsibility for your own experiences. Everything in this podcast is property of Prudence Ministries, a private healing association.